Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
Our friend historian Timothy P. Brown recently had a post that the biggest dudes in football history prior to World War I. The names in this list are varied. Some famous, while some others you may have never heard of. Tim reminds us to remember the big guys from over 100 years ago in this podcast and in his post, coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes at PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome again to Tuesday FootballArchaeology.com Day with Timothy P. Brown joining us. Tim, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Thank you, Darren. Look forward to chatting once again, trying to see what we can uncover here.
Yeah, you know, we always talk about you have some unique items that you share in the daily tidbits, and we'll tell the listeners how to join that each and every day here near the end of this podcast. But you have one that's really unique, and you're talking about the size of players back before the World Wars, and really interested to hear what you have to say about that.
Yeah, so, you know, this tidbit was about a guy named Robert Blanchard. And this is just a classic example where I was looking for one thing and kind of the article next to it shows this illustration or drawing of this rather large individual. And so, I recorded that and then came back to it later on. And so, basically it's, kind of the idea is this guy was a very big player. I mean, he's a huge man today by today's standard. But, back in the day, and really, I would say until just after World War II, oftentimes the linemen were about the same size as the backs. Now, that seems, kind of impossible nowadays because, there really is quite a discrepancy. Although you see some of the things that, see some of the guys running around at the combine, you realize there's some athleticism and very large sizes nowadays. But it just kind of caught my eye. And, it kind of took me back to one of the first football collectible items I bought was a game program. And it was like Princeton versus somebody from, like 1943. And, I was just looking at the thing. And then between the two teams, I think there were like two guys over 200 pounds. And, so then to see this Robert Blanchard and at his size was pretty striking. So, it kind of caused me to go back and look at, who were claimed to be the biggest guys in college football at different times pre-World War II anyways. And mostly I looked at pre-World War I, but, so one of the guys, Pudge Heffelfinger, famous Yale player, but he was considered massive, but he was also very quick, played guard for them, but he was 210 pounds. And then there is Tiny Maxwell, who was considered, just massive. And he was 240, which, today is like, linebackers, 240 pounds. And then, there were a bunch of guys that were like 270 pounds or better, but just only a couple of guys here and there. But this Robert Blanchard, who played for Hinsdale High School in New Hampshire, he was 6'2", 410. So, that's a big boy. And, they the newspaper articles, you know, said he was pretty agile, you know, for his size, but still, you know, he didn't play college football or anything. He was so big that, you know, he couldn't get football pants. You know, I mean, they were making the, you know, the old quilted pants, you know, back at the time with the padded, you know, the whole front of the pads or front of the pants were padded. So, you know, I mean, he was one of these guys who was so big, he kind of became kind of a, he's like a circus exhibit, you know, that they got bigger crowds when they went on the road just because everybody wanted to see this big guy play, you know. So, I mean, it sounds like he was a decent player, you know, being, like I said, I think earlier that he didn't play college. So, you know, he just kind of went off and lived his life. But 410-pound or 412-pound man, that's a pretty good-sized fellow. So, so then it also gets into the, you know, I don't think I really covered this much in the tidbit was, but it's the, okay, so what changed? Why do we have so many, so much discrepancy now between backs and linemen? And, you know, there's gradations. You got tight ends and linebackers, and, you know, they're kind of somewhere in between. But so, you know, I think one of them is just, I've got like four or five different reasons. And if you want to jump in and throw one or several out, have at it. But I think, you know, so one of the things is just nutrition, you know, societal nutrition. You know, I mean, I know when, you know, the GIs inducted in World War II, the average guy was like 5'8", 145, you know, that's not a real big fella, right? Yeah, but now, you know, you go to any high school, and there's all kinds of kids who are 6'5", 6'4", and, you know, pretty sizable. Not all not all of them carrying good weight, but nevertheless, I mean, there's a lot of big frames out there, you know, if nothing else. So, you know, I think that's got to be mostly just, you know, as much as we decry, you know, the nutrition nowadays, and rightfully, you know, it's still better than it was, right? You know, people just have food on the table pretty much all the time.
Yeah, and that was probably right in that era when, you know, up in Michigan they were starting like the training tables for the athletes and stuff too that gave them better nutrition at least during the football season for the football athletes, and I think that carried on and became, you know, like today people are nutritionalists all year long, even in the off season they're training. So I think there's a lot of merit to that with the nutrition. And you know, I think our foods today have a lot more preservatives. I think that makes us all gain a little bit more weight than probably our ancestors did. It makes us grow taller and have features that are larger than, you know, previous generations. So I think there's a lot of merit to what you say.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, there's other, like for me, really the number one thing in my mind is it's two platoon football kind of combined with free substitution, you know. I mean, you think about, I mean, again, as good of athletes as some of these offensive linemen and defensive linemen are, if they had to play every down, if they were 60-minute men, they might still be the same guys out there playing, but they would not carry the kind of weight that they're carrying now. You know, they would have used all the scientific advances to train to a different style of body. And I think you just look at, you know, rugby players, you know, world-class rugby players, there aren't, you know, I mean, 240 is kind of the top end. I mean, here and there, there's going to be somebody, some Samoan dude who's like, you know, or New Zealander who's, you know, 260 or 265. But, you know, those guys are, you know, they're big men, big frames. They're just not anywhere near the size of a 6'7", 6'8" offensive tackle, you know.
Yeah. But didn't, I don't want to ruin your thunder here, but didn't the role of the tackle back in that era was a little bit different than it is now, because they could carry the ball. They, really want you like your best athlete, like Pudge Heffelfinger. I mean, there's a reason why he was the first paid professional player. Everybody wanted him on their team because he was so valuable at that tackle position. Yep. Not that tackles aren't valuable today, but I mean, they were like the superior athletes of the era. That's where you wanted your best player to be. So yep.
So I mean, guards, tackles, ends carried the ball. You know, I mean, you look at the old Stag and Camp, you know, books, they got play designs showing all of that. And, you know, just read the old newspapers, and that's quite clear. But it's, you know, so, and then like you think about, like, it used to be that the center was, some teams had big centers and others said, no, we want a little bit smaller guy, because especially when they started dropping the center off the line a little bit on defense, and they called him a roving center. And that was really the start of kind of what we now think of as middle linebackers. You know, that guy had to be able to move laterally, right? And so if there's a big, you know, heavier, powerful guy, that might help him on offense, but not so much on defense. You know, so you just need to be able to move, you know, a bit more. And again, it had to do offense and defense. You know, quarterbacks, you typically didn't have a guy who was 6'5", 6'6", you know, because he had to play safety as well, right? You know, so, you know, just, and then the other thing, especially with the linemen, is the change in offensive blocking rules. You know, once you gave offensive tackles the ability to, out, you know, extend their arms, now all of a sudden you can have a 6'8", 6'7" guy with long arms, and boom, you know, he's just can be past, you know, I mean, he's attacking to some extent, but whole different strategy than like when I played, you couldn't do that yet.
Right.
You punched and backed up, punched and backed up. I mean, that's what you did, you know, as an offensive lineman.
Yeah, so, it's sort, you know, of levels the playing field out a little bit for those larger, taller players, like you say before, you know, with the old blocking rules, you know, the lower center of gravity guys would win every time. Again, you know, a 6'3" guy that weighed 250 would, you know, kill a 6'8" guy. He couldn't do anything. Deter that defender, that little fire plug from coming in, you know, if he wanted to. But now that gives him his reach and everything else with the hands. So I think that's a great rule that when they changed that. And that was probably only 1980s, I think, they changed that.
Yeah, it started changing in the second half of the 70s. It changed in the pro level first, and then at the college level. And then obviously, you know, beyond all of that, you also just, you know, the scouting and the selection process, and, you know, we're much better at, you know, they did rope drill, not rope drills, but you know, they did like box drills and all kinds of, attempts to make guys, you know, to improve their ability to move. But, you know, weight training and skills training is so much more advanced, you know, especially post 1970, or, you know, that kind of era is when that really started taking shape. So anyways, just, it's a whole bunch of reasons, but yeah, there's some big boys out there on the field nowadays.
Yeah, but I don't think I've ever seen anybody 410 pounds, like you said. This no. Robert Blanchard was back in
Bob
the day.
Bob was a big fella.
Yeah, I guess so. And there's you have a really nice sketch of him. I don't think you drew it, but I think it's from back in the day, of him standing next with the football in his arm next to another gentleman who I'm going to assume is like the average size guy, and just towers over him and looks like, you know, looks like a child next to an adult. That's what thing. So, you know, folks, like we said, we're going to have links to Tim's site on this article. So make sure you follow those and take advantage of some of these images he has on the tidbits as well. Some great stuff that really goes to prove the point of what the story that's being told. So, Tim, I just wanted to mention, you mentioned earlier one of your examples besides Pudge Heffelfinger, you know, Tiny Maxwell. And he's kind of an interesting fella. A couple really big games that he was, or maybe not games, but the big events in football history that he was involved with. For one, he was sort of the face of the rough brand of football that story goes that President Teddy Roosevelt saw a photograph of Tiny Maxwell after a game that he played in college and was, you know, beat up pretty bad. And it sort of made his urgency to call the powers that be into the White House to talk about reforming football. And then a few years after that, in the 1906 season, They had a big game at the professional level. Maslin and Canton, Maslin Tigers and the Canton Bulldogs played, big rivalry, and ended up being a very scandalous game. But they knew it was the big rivalry. They wanted the biggest guy they could to keep control of this game. So they got, you know, big Tiny Maxwell to officiate. And he was the official on that game that where professional football almost ended that day because of the scandalous affairs that happened sort of outside of the game. But he's an interesting name in football history.
Yeah, you know, well, he officiated, you know, a lot once he was, you know, out of, you know, once he no longer played. So, but I wasn't aware of the Canton story, so I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah, it's a big event, almost ended pro football, the big 1906 controversy. So, Tim, why don't we share with the listeners how they can listen in, or I'm sorry, read on in your tidbits that we talk about here each Tuesday, because you have these coming out 365 days a year and really enjoyable and unique stuff.
Yeah. So it's, you know, if you're interested in getting them, just go to my website, footballarchaeology.com. I mean, obviously you can just read anything at your leisure there, but if you want to get them every day, just subscribe and you'll get an email at 7 o'clock Eastern every day with, you know, whatever I wrote for that particular 24 hours. And then a couple of others, you know, here and there, a little bit longer articles, twice a month, typically. Or the alternative is to, you know, just follow me on Twitter at Football Archaeology. And there it's going to become a little bit more hit or miss whether you see it or not, but so kind of up to you, however you like to consume information. Either one's available to you.
All right. Timothy P. Brown, footballarchaeology.com is the name of the website. His daily tidbits are available, and you can also listen to him here, pigskindispatch.com, each and every Tuesday. Tim, we thank you for joining us, and we will talk to you again next week.
Hey, great. Looking forward to it. See you in 7 days.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck, because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.